From the pages of Professional Investigator Magazine comes PI Magazine, the podcast. Join us each week for the latest in the world of the professional investigator. Exciting guests, new equipment, marketing tips, software, PI advice, and more. Learn what's new and exciting in PI Magazine, the podcast. Now let's join our host and the publishers of PI Magazine, Jim Nanos and Nicole Cusinelli.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of PI Magazine, the podcast. I'm your podcast host, Jim Nanos. I'm a licensed private investigator based in Southern New Jersey and a co-publisher of PI Magazine. We're recording today from the PI Magazine podcast studios in Southern New Jersey. Working the board this episode, as usual, is our good friend and frequent PI Magazine contributor, Detective Jack Russell. I'm joined today by my co-host and co-publisher of PI Magazine, Nicole Cusinelli. Nick, how's it going?
Hi, Jim. Good evening.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You feel like you've been beat up today? I sure do.
Yeah, I'm tired.
It's just one of those days, you know?
But it's a beautiful evening in Wildwood, New Jersey, so I'm always happy to come down and see you.
I just feel like I've been run over today. It's just one of those days.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Who do we have on the show tonight, Nick?
This evening, we are excited to welcome Georgiana Eisenhart. Georgiana is a program manager for PI Protect from the Brownyard Group, where she works closely with private investigators, security consultants, and professionals in related fields. PI Protect is a leading provider of specialized insurance coverage for investigators. You can learn more at www.brownyard.com. Georgiana, we welcome you to PI Magazine, the podcast.
Hello, thank you. Good evening. How are you?
We're doing well. How's everything going where you're at, Georgiana?
Okay, doing okay.
Good. So if you could, give us a little bit more in your background, and then tell us a little bit about Brownyard also.
Well, I've been with Brownyard for 30 years. I've been managing this program for 20 of it, but have basically done all of my 30 years in the guard and investigative industry. And Brownyard, as you know, is third-generation family-run, 65 years customized in this niche insurance industry.
And Georgiana, before we get into any questions, I'm sure the listeners are very excited, and this is a very relative topic. We'd like to mention to our listeners, we were excited to add another department to the magazine, and we've entitled it Simply Insurance. And Georgiana has been a regular contributor to the magazine with the articles. So for you folks that subscribe to the magazine, you can open up the magazine and read a little bit more about what Georgiana writes about in every issue that we have out in the insurance department.
So Georgiana, I'm licensed in New Jersey, and New Jersey requires, as a requirement to get your license, they do not require any insurance, only a bond, a performance bond. So quite often Okay. Here in New Jersey, Nicole and I are both in our state association. Nicole's actually the executive administrator of our state association. We often get people at meetings when the topic of insurance comes up. They say, why do I need insurance? I have a bond. Why do I need insurance? So I'm going to throw that question to you. Why does a PI need insurance?
Well, because anyone can bring claim for any reason, it doesn't matter. It could be frivolous. If they don't have coverage to defend them, they're left kind of out there alone. And it is niche insurance. There are specialized areas that are not taken into consideration that they can be sued for. And shockingly, sometimes the claim will pay out. I mean, our claims are proprietary and obviously, you know, confidential. But we have an in-house claim service that runs everything, works with the insured and their claimant to determine coverages that are provided and determine the damages that were caused and if there's going to be coverage or not. If the state doesn't require the coverage, that doesn't mean they don't need the coverage.
Well, I always found that odd that I need insurance to drive a car in New Jersey. I need insurance to do just about everything, but they don't require it as a professional investigator. And I always found that kind of odd. What are the types of insurance that the average professional investigator should carry?
Well, definitely general liability and errors and omissions coverage. And that's very broad coverage. We've worked for years to, you know, customize our program and tailor make our coverages designed for the private investigators including the evolving markets that have happened. You know, there's always going to be, and there always is, something new, something evolving, something that's driven by the industry that needs to be taken into consideration. I will just throw out there drones, for instance. That was not something that obviously was considered back then, but needs to be considered now.
Right. I'm a drone pilot, so I fly drones, but I have an entirely separate policy for that from a specialized insurance company that deals specializes in drone insurance.
Which we would recommend. We definitely would recommend because, again, this is new and also ever-evolving. When we get asked, it is a procedure to go through, but it is, quote-unquote, a rider that we would consider for this evolving market now that this has become more prevalent and more common and more of a question to be answered.
Now, Georgiana, can you explain to us what risk exposures PIs commonly face?
One of, I think, the most is your libel, slander, invasion of privacy, which can go hand in hand with a lot of different investigative operations. You know, it depends on, again, it's a case-by-case basis and what was done, what the local laws are, what the state laws are. Did you trespass? Did you surveil from a property you shouldn't have? You know, things like that.
Are they very common? Do you see a lot of these types of suits?
Yes, I would actually say those are the most common claims because that's what typically the typical private investigator is doing in some form is surveilling and or reporting back in some capacity, like a work comp claim fraud investigation, stuff like that. And it depends on how the investigator conducts their investigation. Another thing to put out there is the tracking on the mobile device tracking on cars. What does the state allow? These have been claims that have been, we'll say, in the limelight for, you know, famous people maybe that have had this happen where an investigator really needs to go back to their state laws, rules, what's allowed with certain things that they're allowed to do.
Georgiana, do you see, like you said, I think most investigators are doing surveillance in some capacity. Do you see a lot of those suits, though? I mean, I know you just said you're seeing a significant number, but are a lot of the ones that you're seeing, are they frivolous where people are just throwing suits out there just to try to mitigate? You know, maybe they were caught in a claim or the case didn't go their way and they're just trying to muddy the waters or just throwing something out there. Do you find a lot of those suits are frivolous?
I think that that can be the case because, as I said, you can sue for anything. And sometimes I think the hope is the settlement versus what was really, was there any harm really caused? Was there any claim that was real that the coverage would kick in effect for? It depends on, like, and I hate to say it, it's case by case because you're dealing with different states. And one of the things that I always found funny was how 50 states can look at the same thing 50 different ways. And that's
right.
Kind of how you were addressing insurance before. You know, in New Jersey, you don't have to be licensed. It's kind of like that. So it really does depend, and that's part of the whole claim process.
Now, that's for general liability. Now, how about errors and omission? What typically would an E&O policy cover? What sort of situations would we need errors and omission insurance for coverage?
Well, that's going to be their failure to perform coverage or an error or omission within the scope of their operations. I think a best example would be something like the background investigation. Background investigation is performed. The PI gives the information back to the client who hired them. Say it's a large corporation. Based on the information, they either terminate the employee or they don't hire the employee. If there was something wrong in that investigation, and I will use this as an example, which did happen, it was the son's information, not the father's information, and the father was the one who was terminated.
Wow.
That causes a whole big issue as far as loss of wages, you know, the reputation he now has, his you know, all of those factors can go to that, and that's what the coverage is provided for. There was an error or omission within the scope of the private investor's investigation that wound up being improper information, basically.
Well, how about if the private investigator reports the information correctly, but then it's interpreted wrong, or the company fires or terminates the person based upon what they think is in the report, but it's really not. What I'm trying to say is if I don't make the mistake, but there's adverse action taken based upon my report, even though I may have reported it correctly, I mean, I know I can still
correct.
Be sued. But
the suit will still probably be brought against, obviously, the private investigator,
right, you'll be named
and anyone
in it, yeah.
else involved. However, the policy is going to provide coverage for the defense. The defense costs are outside the policy limit, so it's not eating into any of the policy limits for the defense, and that would hopefully, obviously, be discovered as the investigation went on that, well, the investigator didn't do anything wrong. He gave the correct information, and whatever the client did after that, they're responsible for.
Okay, understood. Now, are there different levels when you look at an investigative agency when they're applying for coverage? Are there, forgive me for my lack of insurance terminology here, but are there like high risk agencies and then low risk agencies? How do you determine, you know, what a high risk would be opposed to like a low risk agency? Is it based solely upon previous claims or?
No, it is actually based on the operations they provide and the clients they provide the services to. So we're looking more for a client who has less contact with the public, more like working for a law firm, work comp fraud claims, a large corporation, versus an investigator who's doing something like domestic work, matrimonial, process serving, we've also found to be high profile. And it is a very broad and diverse spectrum of operations that different private investigators can do. So it's looked on, you know, a case-by-case basis. A background investigative firm who runs a background check, which is very prevalent in this day and age for, well, almost anything now, for your law enforcement job is different than a PI who might do background investigations for an NFL draft. Should, again, something happen with that background investigation and the NFL player doesn't get drafted, there's kind of no going back and fixing something like that.
Well, you can't undo that.
You definitely can't undo that. Mm. So those are the things that are looked into, again, you know, on a case-by-case basis. Like I said, it's a very diverse field. It entails a lot of different operations.
When someone applies for insurance or for coverage, do you take into consideration their background, how long they've been a professional investigator, their training and memberships and associations? I mean, is that all considered into the process?
Absolutely. That's all considered during the underwriting process. We require or would like to see a risk who has, if not at least 5 years, extensive operating experience. If they're a new firm, which I will say is the majority of a lot of what I deal with, we want to see extensive background experience in the industry, such as law enforcement, military related to security or investigative, or an extensive history with a licensed firm. You know, that's the background that we're looking for. And the majority of private investigators are from those kinds of backgrounds.
Georgiana, obviously insurance coverage is extremely important. And, you know, let's say I'm a new PI coming into the field of PI work. What should the new PI or the PI in general look for in insurance coverage?
Well, one thing is obviously the coverage that they're obtaining, mm-hmm. the limits that they're obtaining, the fact that an admitted carrier, which means the forms and program has been filed with the state and approved by the state, plus, you know, if you deal with a surplus lines carrier, they can become insolvent and they might have recourse to the state insurance department. You know, things like that that are important, and it's not always about the price; it's about the coverage, and like I said, the broad coverage, the general liability, the errors and omissions, things that are properly designed to cover the PI for things that they might not think about.
I've said this in previous shows, so I'm not going to do anything I haven't already done. But I know our group of professionals, our demographic, can occasionally be on the frugal side when it comes to spending money. you know, most of us are retired law enforcement, and it's a very frugal group. So I guess what you're saying is you can't just shop price. You really got to compare apples to apples and make sure you're getting the proper coverage and not just look for who's going to offer the lowest premium.
That's correct. A lot of PIs call, and this is kind of a standard. I talk direct with a lot of PIs where a lot of other programs, maybe for Brown Yard, might deal with the brokers right off the bat. I deal with a lot of individuals because all they know is they're becoming licensed, and then a lot of times the state, as we discussed before, drives that they need to get certain coverage, and then they just go out and say, okay, I'll get this, and they kind of think it's like car insurance, and they don't realize the special insurance that they don't realize the coverages that they're trying or should be buying. They don't realize the difference of an admitted carrier or the financial strength of a carrier. And that's kind of all the things that we try to educate them on as far as what buying insurance means and what this does for you. Obviously, like any insurance, the real sign is when you have a claim and how that policy responds. You don't ever want to really test it, but that's what you're looking for. That's the coverage that you're looking for. In the end, am I covered for something I didn't even think about?
And that's why we are just so excited to have this new department in the magazine that covers these type of topics and questions. I mean, Jim, you know perfectly as a new PI, I mean, there's so much to know. There's so much to learn, and your head's probably spinning, and insurance is, like, I don't know insurance. Just it's very complicated, and it's hard to understand. So you need a good professional to kind of walk you through it.
Absolutely. I know when I started my business, you've got so much going on that you're trying to put in place that when it comes to insurance, you're like, just give me the coverage that I need. And you really just start, you have to rely on your agent to really take care of you and know what they're doing as you do. Because most of the times it's just, I just don't have time to dive into this. I just need insurance. And I'm relying on my agent or the agency I'm dealing with to know what I need, which is not the right thing to do. I should know what I need. But a lot of times guys just don't have the time, or, you know, they've come from a career as I did. You come from a career working for the government where you really don't have to worry about these sort of things. And all of a sudden now you're into your second career, you're, you know, somewhere around your 50 years of age, and all of a sudden now it's a dramatic change from what you're accustomed to doing. Now all of a sudden you really have to pay attention to fine details because you've got to have the right coverage and you've got to pay the right amount. And it's not just a matter of check off the box and give me one of those. It's I've got to shop this and I've got to make sure I've got the right coverage and not just shop the price. And I think that's where most guys go wrong, if that is such a thing to say, that where they go wrong is they maybe just don't spend enough time looking at the details. They're just worried about what's it going to be on the check that I have to write you. And that's clearly not the right way to do it. And I'm guilty of that. First couple of years in business, I'm as guilty as anybody where I was just looking at what's the premium.
Just give me what I need because it's right. So overwhelming.
Well, the thing in my case is because it's not required in New Jersey, it's like car insurance easy. They tell you this is what the limits are that you need.
Right.
And you get at least that limit. But if no insurance is required at all, like in our state, you don't know what I need. So I just give me insurance.
Right.
I don't need anything, but give me something.
Yeah.
And you don't realize how much of a mistake you can make by just not getting the right coverage.
You don't know what to ask for.
Right. That's exactly right. Because it's I've never done this before. I don't even need it. According to the state, I don't need it. I know internally I've got to have insurance. I've got to have liability insurance. I've got to have errors and omission. I know I need that, but I don't know what I need. It was hard to deal with. I mean, early on, now it just seems like it's so easy because, you know, I'm a little bit longer in the business and, you know, dealing with folks like you, that every time I get insurance, I learn something. I'm educated, just like these podcasts. I learn something from every podcast we do. I pick up something, and insurance is no exception. I've learned a lot over the podcasts that we've done and conversations with people like you that know this stuff inside out. And I'm thinking, well, I never knew that. You know, I'm 57 years old. I've been in this business for a long time, and I never knew the difference between this and this. I just lumped it all into that insurance category.
Right.
Exactly.
It's just like,
just what, like, they think they're going to call for auto insurance. They think they're just going to call. The state told me I need this. Just give me this. And they really don't know what they're buying. And it's a lot to try and quickly cover in a phone call. I try not to, like, completely make somebody inundated or dizzy. But it's a lot more than that to understand. You're buying limits, you're buying coverage. Yes, this might seem a little bit more expensive than the last person you spoke to, but here's the reasons why. And some of the reasons for Brandyard does go back to the fact we've been doing this for almost 70 years. This is what we're specialized in. Over the time that we've made these coverages and custom made these policies to provide coverage for these niche markets, and taking into place the fact that they evolve. You know, they will call, and like I said, I can inundate them with information, but then just trying to get them to understand what they're buying. Think of all the people in New Jersey that were told you don't need coverage, and now they don't have any because they didn't have to go out and absorb the expense, versus somebody who says, well, let me get coverage anyway.
Right.
And then learns about it.
So let me jump in, and I'll just compose this to you, Jim. I mean, knowing that you didn't need coverage, what made you, were you just thinking smartly, like, why, I just better get it because something could happen? I mean, that's what I would think if someone said, well, you don't need coverage, but I can't imagine not having coverage. I can't imagine not maybe getting sued somewhere along the line. I can't imagine it.
Well, right,
because you're opening a business, but you have to remember how many people think, oh, they didn't require it, I'm good there, and I'm not doing anything high profile. That's a big one.
I think the deciding factor for me was coming out of law enforcement, and I was in a supervisory role, and then I worked as a town manager after I retired, and I saw a number of frivolous lawsuits. And it really struck home that anybody can sue anybody for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that even if you're 100% right and what you've done, somebody could still find a way to sue you. And I realized that I really need that coverage, because not that I expected to be sued, but I really thought in this profession, this line of work, I'm sure there's going to be somebody is not going to be happy with your service, because basically every case we handle as a PI, somebody's not happy with the result. Either the person you've gotten the evidence on, or the person, you know, if I do a case and I say, look, I just couldn't find anything, your client potentially is mad at you because he knows or she knows it's happening. We couldn't prove it. Or if you prove it, the person you proved it against it is not happy with you. So I looked at it as, no matter what I do, 50% of the people involved in my case are probably not going to be happy with the results. And I didn't like those numbers. And I said, I've got to be able to have insurance to cover the possibility of ending up, you know, having a case where somebody's not happy and just, I'm going to sue that guy. And in today's world, I mean, everybody sues everybody for everything. And I just figured that this is going to happen sooner or later. And if it's going to happen, I want to make sure I have coverage.
And, you know, I'll say this again, we encourage any listeners who may not subscribe to the magazine, if you want to learn more. I mean, these articles that you write, Georgiana, are invaluable, and they cover a lot of these things and many other things that we're not covering on this show that people have questions about that, you know, you may not be able to cover or expand upon in a phone call explaining coverage or insurance and what's needed or not needed. But, I mean, these articles really break down and expand upon the whys and hows, and to me, they're invaluable. So we appreciate your presence in the magazine.
Thank you.
Georgiana, we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we want to talk to you a little bit about maybe what some of the questions RPIs ask you. And I want to hear some stories, if you could, of maybe some claims and some coverage. Sanitize the best you can. And give us some real-world examples of some things that's happened. So everybody hold on. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by PI Magazine, the most respected voice of the professional investigator, featuring stories and articles on current topics, equipment reviews, marketing tips, and investigative advice for the professional investigator. Don't miss a single issue of PI Magazine. Visit PIMagazine.com and subscribe today. PI Directory, the go-to directory for the professional investigator. List your agency today and detail your investigative specialties and coverage areas. PIDirectory.com. Get your listing today. Go to PIDirectory.com. PI Gear, for all your professional investigator equipment needs, go to PIGear.com. Professional grade equipment and advice for real surveillance experts and professional investigators. Visit PIGear.com. PI Gear, where the pros shop. Now back to our hosts, Jim Nanos and Nicole Cusinelli.
And welcome back, everybody, to PI Magazine, a podcast. I'm your host, Jim Nanos. I'm here with my co-host, Nicole Cusinelli, and we're speaking with Georgiana Eisenhart of the Brown Yard Group. Georgiana, when we left, before we went out on break, I wanted to see if we could discuss a little bit out, maybe some questions that PIs are asking you about insurance. And if there are some funny ones out there, we'll take those too. But maybe some of the questions people are asking.
A lot of the questions I get, I think, would come back to the conversation we were talking about before, where they're calling because they have to. They're calling because the state requires the coverage. They're becoming, and like I said, a lot of contact that I first have is with investigators who are newly becoming licensed, leaving the public sector, going into the private sector. They don't really know what they're getting. If it's not state-driven requirements, the other thing is it can be client-driven requirements, where in order to take their first job, the client is requiring this type of coverage, this type of limits. All this has to be done and worked into their either their proposal or their, you know, their contract. So again, it becomes almost like an education process because it's a little more involved than they really think that it is. And we're kind of a lot of times the first line of defense to try to explain all of that to them and get them pointed in the right direction and looking at the right things that they need for their operation.
Well, I had a question. I just wanted to jump in with this, and I've heard that no question is a stupid question, so I'm going to ask it anyway. Do many of the states not require insurance?
As of right now, I would say most do. I'm actually surprised to hear from Jim that Jersey doesn't. But yeah, actually it can be between a bond and general liability. I think actually might New York might still be like that. I don't see that there's a world of difference of having a bond as opposed to being, you know, having proper coverage should a lawsuit happen.
Well, in our case, they tell you we need a $5,000 bond, and I just can't imagine what $5,000 is going to get you in today's world. And a bond is not a liability policy, and a bond is not coverage of errors and omission. I really think that's old terminology from many, 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 many years ago. You know, maybe when lawsuits weren't as prevalent as they are today, and they were more concerned about a performance bond sort of thing rather than liability or errors and omission.
Correct. And you know, industry average in this day and age, while we do sell lower limits and there are lower state limit requirements, industry average is $1 million for the GL, E&O coverage. Oh. So you're, like you're saying, $5,000 versus industry average of $1 million. And I'm going to come back to defense costs are outside the policy limits. Anybody who's been in a court system in any way, shape, or form knows how long proving a claim to be frivolous and having it thrown out can still cost you a lot of money in defense costs.
I've heard lawyers are expensive these days.
just a little.
No kidding.
It's gone up a little, yeah.
So obviously for those reasons, you know, again, would you want to find yourself in a frivolous lawsuit that drags you through the courts and you're just spending money after money on these defense costs just to prove it wrong and get it thrown out?
It would cost you an incredible amount of money, an incredible amount of time. And frankly, obviously, I'm not an attorney. So I would need professional help, and most of us are not in a position financially that we could bankroll a $1 million lawsuit against us.
Correct. and it is extremely expensive. And say there was a legitimate lawsuit, and this is what it's for, the investigator did something wrong. By the time all those defense costs play out, before the ruling of the actual lawsuit, again, those defense costs are outside the policy limits. So say they decide to give $500,000 in the claim. That's aside from maybe the other $450,000 to defend the claim.
If you're defending a lawsuit, you may have to go out and hire a private investigator, and you know what kind of money they charge. So you better have a good policy.
Correct.
So, Georgiana, can you give us some examples of maybe some claims that you've gone over or handled over the years that have been filed against professional investigators, and give us a little insight and some background on some claims that you've handled?
Well, as we discussed, I mean, claims are confidential and proprietary, but the general gist, I would say, is I think that the most prevalent, especially with private investigators, would be that invasion of privacy lawsuit. I mean, we've obviously dealt with all different kinds of claims. It's hard to necessarily say things. The one I used as an example before was, and it was a real claim, the father got terminated from a very large, well-known corporation based on the son's background investigation information. There's stuff like that that's going to come back to the private investigator. That's meant to cover him should they do something wrong. You know, there's also claims that you just don't see coming that you can't even underwrite. There's no kind of risk assessment, and it can just get you out of left field. An investigator does, searches for the client. The client's looking for somebody. The investigator finds the person, right? Everyone has thought about, oh, I wish I could find that person. And the client's used the investigator previously, so it's not even an unknown client. And that client goes back and does something not so good with the information, we'll put it.
Right.
Nobody could see that coming, you know. That's kind of hard. That kind of nefarious activity is a little hard to see coming. A lot of people want to find lost relatives, lost friends, all different kinds of reasons. And again, if the investigator has had this person as a client before, they really wouldn't have reason to think about it. These are all the things that you don't think of that can happen. A big thing with private investigators is I'm not doing this, so it's not high profile. A big one I just read today, there's no field work. It's all in-house investigative work. What makes them think that they can't have a claim from the in-house investigative work on the computers? Again, like the background investigations versus being out in the field. Just because you're not in the field doesn't negate the fact that you could have a claim from doing the computer work in-house.
I would almost look at it as thinking if you're doing in-house work, that could be almost riskier because almost entirely when you're doing things on a computer, you're relying on information somebody else is giving you, whether it's social media or a data company or just you're looking through web pages. It's something somebody else has provided. At least if I'm out doing a surveillance, I get to dictate whether I go on that property or I stay in the street or I park my car here. At least I have some control over that. But when you're, you know, surfing on Facebook or other social media platform trying to gather information, I mean, you're not even 100% sure where that information came from, yet we're utilizing
it. And I'll give you a prime example. I have a very unique name. I'm named after my father. My father and I are forever crossed in everything. I don't have a middle name, but I have his middle initial, our addresses, all just general quick public information. It's all crossed. So that's a very easy mistake to make when a background investigator, if they're not, you know, looking at that information. You're correct. If you go out and do surveillance, your whole point as a PI is, well, not to be seen. So hopefully right there, that's cutting out some exposure because everything you're supposed to be doing is supposed to be covert versus sit at a computer, click send, hit the report, and it goes off to somebody, and it could be wrong.
I have a very similar problem at conferences. People are constantly confusing me with Burt Reynolds, and it happens all the time.
Are you serious?
All the time. Oh, all the time. They always think I'm Burt Reynolds.
You should do like one of those lookalike contests.
Nicole, do you think I look like Burt Reynolds?
I never know.
Okay, so you know it's a joke then.
Oh, I thought you were serious because I've never thought that when I first met you. No. I mean, you're very distinguished looking, but I'm not seeing Burt. I'm not seeing Burt Reynolds.
Stop or I'm going to have to cut that out.
So I have a question, and this would never, never, never happen. But so if Jim crashes his drone into someone's house, would that be covered?
I really don't know because I don't have that much exposure with drones.
We got one you didn't know. Has that ever happened, Jim? No, I'm sure
but,
it hasn't.
But I'm insured for it because you just never know what's going to happen.
Well, it could happen.
Sure. I mean, just like a car. I don't plan on crashing my car into a house, but theoretically it could happen. So you've got to have coverage
true,
for it.
True, but a drone could very easily crash into a house if you just make a mishap or a maneuver and something goes awry.
I'm almost sure. I'm trying to think my policy. I think it actually says someplace on there or it did in the application that drones are excluded because that's above and beyond what, you know, most PIs are doing and most job descriptions, I guess.
Right, they're not being utilized.
Right, it's
evolving in the industry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you could make, you know, that sort of distinction for anything. I mean, if I go out and rent an airplane, I'm a licensed pilot and I rent an airplane to do a surveillance, is that covered? It's probably not.
Right.
You know, I mean, you could probably go 10 degrees of whatever with crazy situations, but I would think if you're doing something that the average PI out there does not define as part of your job description, you should probably look into making sure that you have a rider for that or an individual policy for that. Make sure you're covered.
That is correct. And it can't all be taken for granted, you know, that how they interpret it versus how it really is interpreted. It's better to disclose and discuss and make sure that you have the proper coverage versus find out you don't.
Right, after there's a claim or an accident.
Correct.
Well, Georgiana, from your perspective as an insurer, and you've been in the business for, like you said, 30 years, have you seen any changes in the private investigator industry in the past, let's say the past 5 years? What, if any, changes have you seen?
I definitely think that I get a different call almost all the time. It's so much is going on. First of all, I mean, just since 9/11 alone, background investigations, like everything that could be, you have to be checked out, locked down, that is very prevalent. Any kind of investigations into workplace violence is being taken very seriously, obviously, because, again, of what we have with active shooter incidences, and a lot of this stems from workplace violence. So it's not taken lightly. It is investigated, and a lot of times they do bring in an outside impartial firm to do stuff like that.
How about firearms? I mean, as far as PIs carrying firearms, do you see an increase in that? I mean, we live in a different world now than we did 10 years ago or 20 years ago.
Correct. With the private investigative program, there is no firearms exclusion on our policy. And for the most part, obviously, as I'm vetting these different insureds, for the most part, they are retired law enforcement and or, you know, military or very high ranking. They're licensed to carry, and we understand that. So, yes, they can carry their firearm. And if it's used within the scope of their operations, the policy will respond. I'm going to use an example. We had an investigator who should have just been performing surveillance but did catch somebody in the act of doing something criminal and decided to pursue. That should not have happened. They were not a guard. They were doing supposedly incognito surveillance. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if something happens where they're working during the scope of their operations and they are attacked or use their firearm, then that's going to come back to, you know, the policy, and there would be coverage. We do not exclude the fact that they are allowed to carry their firearm. No.
Yeah, that could be an interesting situation where you jump into action. It's not job related.
As I like to say, you're going to spring into action.
spring to action.
With cat-like reflexes.
Yeah, and the world has changed. I mean, again, like you said, with workplace violence and, of course, since 9/11, it's just the world's become a much different place. So I'm sure the insurance industry has adapted with those changes and coverages involved.
And even a lot of, you know, a lot of the law enforcement agencies have suffered budget cuts, so they have their senior members who then are retiring, and they're already have clearance, so they hire them back as subcontractors, say, to do the licensing or the training or the fingerprinting for their own law enforcement department. So, you know, that's one way that they've dealt with budget cuts. They already have somebody who's already got the clearance. They bring him back as a subcontractor, and he does all the work for the department. Stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up, I mean, I'm sure, Georgiana, we could talk about so much more. We only have so much time in the show. Is there anything that you'd like to maybe add before we close the show that we maybe didn't ask or that you'd like to cover for any of our listeners?
I just think it's important for a private investigator, as we discussed through the podcast, to understand what they're looking for, what it's covering them for, and all of the different aspects. What a licensed insurer means, what premium are you paying, even though another premium might sound better, what coverage is you getting for, to educate themselves in the whole package, not just the bottom line, or just doing what the state says, educating themselves on protecting themselves.
Right, and of course, not to be overwhelmed. I mean, obviously, professionals like yourself will walk them through it. I feel assured that a person like yourself knows what they're doing and would walk me through any questions that I had. And I think that the takeaway from this is really not that there is insurance, but that you need insurance. Not that it's out there, but that you absolutely, no matter what, that you need the coverage, even if it's not required. That's really the takeaway, I think, from this
show. Correct. And that's just part of a smart business plan, as well as covering yourself for the very special operations being provided.
Georgiana, can you tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you, how they can contact you if they have any questions or they want to talk about their insurance coverage or bind insurance?
Sure. I'm at Brown Yard. Our phone number is 631-666-5050. I'm at extension 121. And again, my name is Georgiana. Ask from any time.
Georgiana, we thank you, and we're going to have all Georgiana's contact information on the show notes. So we're going to wrap up this episode of PI Magazine, the podcast. I'd like to thank our guest, Georgiana, again. I'd like to thank my co-host, Nicole Cusinelli, and of course, board operator, Detective Jack Ross, who did an outstanding job this evening. Remember to visit PI Magazine and PIgear.com and support the advertisers and sponsors and friends who support our profession and this podcast. Join us next week for another episode of PI Magazine, the podcast. I'm your host, Jim Nanos, along with Nicole Cusinelli. And until then, remember, stay professional and keep investigating.
Thank you for joining us in this episode of PI Magazine, the podcast. Join us next week for a new and exciting show with your hosts and the publishers of PI Magazine, Jim Nanos and Nicole Cusinelli. Remember to check out our guests and sponsors' websites to support those who support our profession. Visit PIMagazine.com for the latest links, conference updates, and professional news, and subscribe today. Thank you again, and remember, keep investigating.